There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Oh no. It's the Off Menu Podcast.
With James Acaster.
That's you saying that, and Ed Gamble, that's me saying that. Hello, James.
Hello, Ed, how are you?
I'm good, mate.
Good to see you. You can find Fettle.
Thank you. What does that mean?
Nice cap.
Good. Thanks very much. Hey, great episode today.
Oh, such a great episode.
We're very excited.
Very excited because it's our first ever chef, Tom Kerridge.
And if you're here because you're a fan of Tom and you've never listened to the podcast before, what is it, James?
We are going to ask Tom Kerridge what the best ever, or just his favourite, starter, main, side, drink and dessert are. He can order whatever he likes in our magical restaurant, and I'm a genie.
And James is a genie, but we'll come to that. That actually, there's more depths to the genie revealed today that even I didn't know about, James.
Or me.
Or you.
So it's very exciting.
Are you telling me you were riffing that off the top of your
No. I just noticed them for the first time. I noticed those details for the first time.
Okay, I see.
Yes.
Hey, I tell you what, finally, this podcast is paying off.
This is very exciting.
Right. We have been sent some chocolate for free.
Oh, yes.
From Brooklyn, America.
Yeah.
Is that your impression of someone from Brooklyn?
I think so.
Yeah.
The 99.
It's like posh, proper chocolate. A lady called Sarah contacted me on Instagram and said, would you like some chocolate from the company that I work for? It's called Raka Chocolate, R-A-A-K-A. It's unroasted dark chocolate, and it comes in like, it's come in this posh box.
Good. It looks good.
With like, it's so cool and hipster, and I love it. There's like a booklet about how they make it. There's all these different flavours like pink sea salt and bourbon and bananas Foster.
Bananas Foster.
Now we've got to divvy this up fairly.
Okay.
What flavours do you want?
Well, that's a fun game. You can try and guess what flavours I want because I think you'd be able to get them pretty
well. You want bananas Foster.
Yeah, already gave the game away there, didn't they?
And ain't no way I'm having bananas Foster. Thank you. I'm sure it's delicious, Sarah. I think you might want bourbon, but also I want bourbon.
Yes, I would like that.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for sending us that chocolate. And if you work for a cool artisan food company and you think, well, I won't send them anything because surely they won't mention the company just for some samples, we fucking will.
Yes, we will. We do not care when it comes to getting free food. We did this podcast for a reason. We love food. And so therefore, if you send us food, we're going to talk about it.
And if you're into chocolate, we're going to stick some photos up of this. We really will. We're really going the whole hog with this.
Yeah. I think it's great. If I followed this podcast on Twitter and stuff, I'd want to see the photos of the chocolate and then buy the chocolate, eat it. This is great. This is exactly what I like. I don't even know. If anyone's listening to this, think we're a couple of sellouts. You can go ram yourself.
Right. So, great episode today.
Such great episode. Tom Kerridge, though, he will be in trouble if he says he wants quinoa in his food.
Every week we have a secret ingredient that if the guests mentions the secret ingredient in their dream meal, they're out on their ear. They get kicked out of the restaurant, banned for life. The secret ingredient this week, as James said, is quinoa.
I just don't get it.
I'm going to hold my hands up. I don't mind a bit of quinoa.
Yeah, sure, I don't mind it. No one's eating quinoa saying it's delicious, though.
No, I like the texture. I like the nutty flavour.
I don't like the texture. It annoys me.
Right, well, I'm willing to go with you on this one. If Kerridge mentions quinoa, he's out.
Kerridge mentions quinoa.
More difficult to say than I'd imagine that.
Quite fun to say, though. Kerridge mentions quinoa.
But you're saying mentions.
Mentions. Oh, don't mention Kerridge.
No, this is not the cleanest intro we've ever done, but Kerridge mentions quinoa.
Kerridge mentions quinoa. If Kerridge mentions quinoa, he's going to be in trouble.
Oh, and this week, keep listening until the end because we've got some bonus content right at the end. That's the bonus content noise, as is tradition in the world of podcasting. So keep listening towards the end for some bonus content. Follow us on social media at Off Menu Official on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe, like, review, all that stuff. I'll be saying that at the end as well. But here, finally, we've battled through this intro, the brilliant Tom Kerridge. We're here with Tom Kerridge. Hello, Tom.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We feel very honoured to have our first chef guest here.
Thanks very much for having me.
Chef number one.
Now, I don't know if you're aware of the podcast, Tom, but James is a genie in this.
Yeah, I've done a bit of research. I listened to one on the way on the car this morning.
Absolutely perfect.
That's what we like to hear.
I like the genie's arrival.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I just you just got to see it for real then.
Yeah, it was
up close and personal. Got to see me coming out the lamp.
Yeah,
yeah. We don't.
Not
have
many people expect I come out feet first. Every time.
You're a very offbeat genie.
Yeah. Feet first. I land on my head.
With odd socks on.
Yeah. With odd socks, so people don't go, who's this? Two people coming out the lamp. Oh no, it was one guy with odd socks on. Keep everyone guessing.
Unlike most genies, James wears socks.
Yes, that's true.
Because I don't know if you've seen genies before, but they don't tend to have feet.
No,
normally they're
socks, and only socks. I cover my modesty with a rubber ring, like from a swimming pool. That's what I'm wearing.
So much being added to the genie lore today.
Yeah, well, it's about time. People needed a bit of an update on what my life is like.
Socks and a rubber ring.
Yeah.
And that's it?
Yeah. And when we said odd socks, one of them is a big old football sock, and one of them is one of those half socks that people wear to make it look like they've got no socks when they're hipsters.
Trainer socks.
Yeah, trainer socks. That's what I'm wearing.
Well, welcome. You've really come into the deep end here, Tom, I'll be honest.
Yes.
It's first thing in the morning and James hasn't had a coffee or anything.
If you're worried about being in the deep end, I can lend you my rubber ring if you like. Yeah. Float around with it.
No, I can see where it's been. I'd rather not.
What's your kitchen like in the lamp, James?
Oh, it's
Are you cooking in the lamp?
Well, yeah, let's face it. I'm a magical genie. I can make people whatever food they want. So it's basically if you imagine all the kitchens in the world in one... That's what it is. All state-of-the-art equipment.
But I know you like to look after other people and cook them whatever they want, but what are you cooking for yourself in the lamp?
I mean, I'm a humble genie. I'm not eating anything. I'm not cooking anything for myself.
Yeah, but we've got Tom here now. He's got a new book out.
Oh, yeah.
About cooking for yourself and...
That's what you were trying to get me round to.
Yeah. I want to chat to Tom about his book, and you're so within the genie character now.
I was too in the character of the genie. You've got to remember it. It doesn't make sense for genies to do that. But okay. I'm cooking myself some food from Tom Kerridge's Fresh Start.
Thanks, Ed.
That's all right. We
got there eventually.
I'm doing more promo for socks than I am for Tom's book.
James told me before you arrived that he can't cook in his flat at the moment because he doesn't have an extractor fan.
It's a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah.
There's the smoke alarms are hooked up to like pretty much every room in the flat. So if I set the smoke alarm off, I'll wake everybody up in the whole building.
That's bad times. Everyone knows that noise, the smoke alarm, the toast, burning the toast smoke alarm feeling.
I did it first day of university in the halls of residence. I set off the fire alarm with the toaster at like 1 a.m. and everyone had to go outside in their dressing gowns.
Oh boy.
And it was really embarrassing.
Well... Were you bad dressing gowns?
Awful dressing gowns.
Yes.
And they all knew
there.
It was me.
With black crumbs
around my mouth.
Stuff in his face.
Yeah.
Well, that's a fair reason to not cook. No extraction.
I'm sorting it out. I'm getting an extractor fan. It's important to me, Tom, as it should be to everyone, right?
Yeah, extraction fans are very... And you actually want one that actually extracts, not the ones that just turn on and make a noise.
The main noise.
They just make a noise like they're pretending to extract. You want a real one that actually sucks stuff out.
Because those ones will trick people like me early doors.
Yeah.
I'll hear it and think that's working. Yeah. No, you do want something that extracts proper.
Yeah.
But we're... me and you, Tom, we're brothers in weight loss.
Yeah.
I've also lost a lot of weight in my life and changed my lifestyle. Six stone.
That's pretty massive. Six stone is still a huge. It's a huge amount. Huh?
So it's like a big big child.
Yeah. Or a very small adult.
How many did you?
Well, I probably lost. I mean, the best part of 12 stone originally. Then I've started going to the gym a lot. So probably overall around about 11 stone, 10, 11 stone.
Absolute shame, Tom.
Yeah, but I'm a lot bigger. I'm a lot taller, and I was a lot bigger.
Right.
I
mean, okay.
A massive lump. So yeah, I've shifted some timber, but I'm still like a massive lump.
There was some time on the circuit where all anyone was talking about was, "Have you seen Ed Gamble lately?"
Because
that's not even a lie. Every gig I turned up at, first person who walked in, "Have you seen Ed Gamble?" It doesn't look like Ed Gamble anymore.
He looks fit.
He looks fucking sexy. Everyone thought he was so sexy. Yeah. It was so funny. Because I mean, it's true.
That's funny to you, was it?
It was funny that everyone was saying how sexy you were. Yeah. I didn't disagree with it, Ed, but it was just really funny that all of a sudden, all anyone could talk about was how sexy you were. See, Ed, he's really sexy now. True, though.
It is very true.
I think cooking at home is you learn more about food and you have more of an appreciation for it, right?
I mean, when you put the ingredients in, you learn a lot about it. I mean, the most amazing thing about it is you can go around the world with food. It doesn't matter where you're at in your kitchen with no extraction. You can still be cooking a dish from Thailand, you know. Yeah. That's the most beautiful thing about it. And it's great for kids as well. The fact that there's so many things, there's taste, texture, colour, flavour variety, history, geography, that all comes into food. So it's a great learning curve for families. So that's why food ticks a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, when you make something and you get to eat it, like, it's quite a nice reward.
Mm.
Yeah, it really is. You feel so chuffed with yourself, I think.
Sometimes if I'm going out to eat and I don't like the meal very much, I try and imagine that I've cooked it, because then I like it more.
You're one of the oddest people I've ever met in my life.
No, but it's true, because I'm like, actually, it's pretty good for me.
Yeah.
You know? But that works.
Yeah. I've done all right here, actually. Yeah,
but then you have to give somebody else money.
I'll pay someone else for the fantasy. Yeah, sure. But, you know.
Tom, today you don't have to cook.
No.
Because you're at the dream restaurant.
Yeah.
The waiter's already appeared. And now he's just shot some guns for no reason.
Oh, I just killed some people outside. But this episode's going to be very tense. The cops are coming. So, first of all, can I get you some water, Tom? Would you like still or sparkling water?
I quite like sparkling, actually. Sparkling is pretty... either way, it doesn't really matter. But whatever's easiest. I always say whatever's easiest to the waiter, and this is sometimes it confuses them halfway through a meal, because then I might have sparkling water in a glass, and when they top it up, they put still. All that goes the other way around, then you end up with half and half water. So I'll just drink it. I'm not bothered.
Because then it's giving you whatever is easiest, which means
exactly
whatever is what, nearby or in supply?
Yeah, whatever's in their hand right now.
Yeah.
Well, that'll do. It's still clear and wet. That's fine.
I mean, yeah, if I was a waiter and you said whatever's easiest, which I am a waiter, and you have said that to me.
You're a genie waiter.
I am going to at some point give you a bit of half and half, because I've never seen someone drink some half and half before. I've never seen someone drink half still, half sparkling. I'd want to see what...
That's a maverick move.
It's kind of... It's like really boring sparkling water.
Right, yeah.
Just a hint.
Yeah,
a hint
it's like if
sparkle.
You've opened a bottle of sparkling water, you've drank it, and then you've left it in the fridge for 5 days, and then you drink it again. That's what it's like.
That's what Top Chef Tom Kerridge gets.
That's your first choice, Tom?
When he goes to a restaurant.
Like 5-day-old sparkling water. Yeah. That's very specific.
Aged very well.
What year is this water?
So that's a sparkling water. That's a good choice. Half and half. That's the first half and half we've had.
First half and half, sparkling.
Yeah, a little bit of sparkling. Yeah. Pop it on top bread! Pop it on top bread, Tom!
I've got to be honest. So... I try and do low carb, so neither. I'm going to give them both a swerve.
Oh, that's the first time anyone swerved it.
Are you going to go rogue and go prawn crackers? Because that's a secret one. You can go for that if you want to.
Well, I'll also throw another one out there. I've got a shellfish allergy, so I'll swerve those as well.
What the hell, Gary?
It's not getting off to a great start, this restaurant, is
no,
it?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I never expected anyone to swerve Poppadoms or bread.
No. So you do not want either of them.
I will be firm on this and go...
When's the last time?
I want both of them.
Yes.
Yeah. But I go, actually, no, I'm going to have neither. So...
When's the last time you had a Poppadom?
I don't know. It would have been some point towards the end of last year, I would have thought.
There would have been some point.
Like, it's not... It's sometimes every now and then you fall off the wagon, but most of the time I'm pretty good. So, yeah, it's not... So...
What's the most tempting one?
Poppadom or bread? Bread. Every freshly baked, amazing crusty bread with loads of salty butter on. Amazing. That would be delicious.
Yeah.
So now, you've talked me into it. I'll have bread, please. Did you talk me into that? I talked me.
When you listen back to that, we didn't say anything for about 20 minutes, Tom. You were just describing the bread and the smell.
You spoke like someone
freshly baked, wonderful baguette, crusty on the outside, still warm in the middle, with loads of like freshly churned, salted butter. And delicious. Yeah, that, please.
Have you, so when you say freshly churned, because I reckon you're probably one of the only guests we've had on the podcast, you've probably had some pretty fresh butter.
Yeah.
Like some, you've probably been to a dairy farm and had some like...
Straight out the cow.
I tell you what, one of the most amazing meals I've had was in a restaurant called Franson, which is in Stockholm. Mm-hmm. And they made the bread and the butter in front of you. It was mind-blowing. So when you got to the table, instead of it being a vase with flowers in or whatever, the table like decoration in front of you was a block with a wooden block with a bread dough proving in front of you with a glass lid on it.
Wow.
And then you had a couple of courses in, and then they take the bread away to bake it because it's proved up in front of you. Then they go and bake it. And whilst they're baking it, the waiter comes to the table with raw cream and beats the cream so it separates, pours the milk away and turns it into butter in front of you and serves the butter just freshly made with salt. And then the bread comes back fresh from the oven. It was like a mind blow. And it's the simplest thing that made it outstanding.
And then you had to say to them, I don't do carbs.
Yeah.
I mean, what a...
I got to be honest, that was before my life-changing epiphany. Right. By that point, I probably had 3 bottles of wine, 7 gin and tonics, and I was like, this is amazing bread. I actually ordered it again. I was like, give us more bread. It was a weekend away with a couple of chefs, and it was chaos and mayhem. So we were like, get me more of that bread, which actually threw them a little bit because there wasn't any more proving in front of the table.
Yeah, of course.
So I think they probably had to steal somebody else's bread.
It's all about the sort of theatre of it, really, isn't it? And that's like going to a play and then going, first half again.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. That was so good. Do it all again. Yeah. And then, what? Come on, I'll pay you.
That sounds absolutely incredible.
Yeah, that was brilliant. So phenomenal. I've had that's very fresh butter.
That is, yeah. Oh, I want some right now. On its own. I'd eat that butter on its own, I reckon. I'm not letting my mouth off.
How strong were the waiters? They must have been really strong waiters, like just beating butter all day in front of
Well,
people.
There was just one guy with one massive arm.
Yeah.
Huge arm.
Living that tortured existence. Yeah. Poor man. For your starter, sir.
Yeah. Well, I've been very fortunate. I've travelled like loads, and food has been part of my life. Like I've been a chef for 27 years, but some of the simplest things are the best. So I quite like calamari, please, with some very simply made fresh mayonnaise. That would be delicious.
Now, a lot of plates. See, I reckon most of the time when I go out to eat, and I haven't been there before, I'll look for the calamari.
You're a proper squid boy.
Yeah, I had squid with you yesterday.
Yeah,
you saw me order it. I'm not lying just to impress Kerridge.
it's a good safety option as well. If you're in a new restaurant and you don't know what it is and you're a little bit unsure, squid calamari is a good safety option. Although there is a little bit of a downfall that I don't think a lot of people know, that quite often those squid rings, they're reformed. Quite often they're like processed squid meat that's then piped. You'll be able to tell the ones that are almost circular rather than just flat. Do you know what I mean? Like, so if they're reformed and then so it's not fresh squid rings. So it's got to be fresh squid rings, not the reformed ones that I don't know where you ate yesterday, but you know.
somewhere in Camden. It was our friend took us to a place in Camden.
Yeah.
But that was baby squid.
Yeah,
so you can't get away with baby squid then.
If they reformed that fair play to them.
Yeah. That would be more hassle than it's worth, really, wouldn't it? That would be hours of crafting.
Absolute artist in that kitchen.
And you polished it off in seconds.
Yeah. It didn't even bat an eyelid. Where's the place you've had the best calamari?
Greece, like I love Greece as a holiday. It's an amazing space. Sat on a kind of like just one of those taverna like things on the front of the beach, watching the sun go down, eating calamari. Amazing, like love it.
Is that important to you? Setting?
Well, I think when from a restaurant's point of view, it is quite. They're the things that make restaurants work. Is the whole environment. It's not just the food, because you can have amazing food in places, but it's not always necessarily served well. I mean, not like the standard of waiter that we have here, and definitely not in an environment like we have. I mean, this is outstanding. But you know, when you tick all of those boxes, that does make some of the best meals you can ever have are with the company that you've got and the place it is, as well as the food being good. So it does, it does make a difference. It does make a difference.
My dad has a theory that I think this specifically when you go on holiday, though, if the restaurant has a lovely view or an amazing surrounding, the worse the food's going to be, and you have to find the place, like say you're in Greece, you have to find the place that's like down a side street and there's like a mangy old dog walking past, and they're going to have the best food because they have to get people in.
Yeah, I that's a fair theory, particularly in holiday resorts. I mean, I remember once we went to a place in Cyprus with my wife and my little man, and we went and we were driving. I got a taxi driver to take us into town, and it just takes us somewhere nice, a taverna place. And as he drove into town, there was this place on the right hand side, and he goes, "That's where I go. That's where all the taxi drivers go."
Yeah.
And then, but I'll drop you in town at the front. And you went to the front, and they're just these packed tourist places with the bloke at the front going, "Come on in, very nice. Come on in." Yeah, and it's like, "Hold on a minute. All right, let's go back to where the taxi driver is." And went back there, and it was amazing. It was an incredible meal, cooked by three lovely old ladies in the kitchen doing beautiful like stews and stuff. So yeah, your dad's theory definitely worked in Cyprus then.
Yeah.
the closer to a landmark something is, the worse it is.
I'd agree with that.
Food-wise.
Yeah.
If it's close to a landmark, we'll just get the stragglers, doesn't matter. You just get all the tourists walking around going, often, like I went to Paris last year for one day because my sister's family were there and they got little kids. So we went to see the Eiffel Tower, and then it's like, we need to eat. You can't walk around Paris for ages with little kids on your phone going, "No, I've Googled the best place. We're going to go." Yeah. So you just kind of go to the nearest place, and then you're sitting there going, "We are absolute mugs."
Spending 20 euros on a really bad crepe.
On like a really bad burger. It was so bad. I mean, we all, the company was nice, sure.
But not good
and
enough
the view.
No, the company, great company. Always good enough. I'd eat anything with my family, Ed, and you know it.
Big wedge of lemon with the calamari?
Yeah, I quite like a big wedge of lemon. Give it a good squeeze on it, definitely. Yeah, I think you need that. Acidity is really good. I mean, it's only a little bit like putting malt vinegar on fish and chips, isn't it?
Mm.
It's like that acidity that brings it to life. So, yeah.
It's a big moment, though, when you start doing that. As a kid, you're not doing it.
No. That is very
true. You ain't never seen a kid squeezing a wedge of lemon over anything. Never happens. You'd be like, "What's going on? What are you eating olives as well, you little punk?"
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Today's episode of Off Menu is sponsored by Aura. James, are you ready to win Mother's Day?
I am, Ed. I want to cement my reputation as the best gift giver in the family. I'm going to give my mom an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos.
May I say, James, I absolutely love the class and elegance with which you use the word mom, because this is for US listeners.
All of your moms deserve a good Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos.
Yeah, I think your mum's going to love looking back on your childhood memories, seeing what you're up to today, seeing what you were up to back in the day, and even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving, James.
Ed, answer me this. Who is the best gift giver in your life?
I'd probably say my wife is a very good gift giver. Not that my mom is not a fantastic gift giver, but my wife's very good at little surprise things. She says, I've only got you a few things, and then there'll be little surprises, things that we've seen throughout the rest of the year. I'll say to my wife, I like that, and then I forget about it, and then on the day, there's some lovely little gifts there for me that remind us of the year that we've just spent together.
Oh, if you like being reminded of stuff, may I suggest photographs?
That's a very good point, James. I think we should get ourselves an Aura digital picture frame and put some of our wedding photos on them.
Right now, Ed, Aura has a great deal for Mom's Day, Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AURAframes.com. Use code OFFMENU at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
As an adult, I remember the first time I ordered some fish and chips and went, I'm actually going to use that lemon and squeeze it over my battered cod. Absolute game changer. And then tartar sauce as well. You're not doing that as a kid.
No kids having tartar sauce, are they?
No kids doing any of that.
Too sharp for a kid's palate.
But as soon as I started doing that, oh, what a game changer.
Well, I'll tell you what, because it's funny, because that is my main course, is fish and chips.
Is it?
It is my main course, is fish and chips.
Wow.
That's what I've chosen.
We are having a day by the sea with Tom Kerry.
We are having a day by the sea. Although, this fish and chips doesn't necessarily have to be by the sea. I mean, like in an idyllic sort of situation, you're sat on a beach somewhere having fish and chips. You know,
yes.
But fish and chips are really special. Like, oh, you remember their childhood memories. And like I say, it's a game changer when you put tartar sauce or lemon juice on it, because actually, as Michelin star chefs, what you're always looking for, any chef is looking for a balance of texture, crunch, acidity, all of those sort of things that come into line. So lemon or capers or gherkins that are in tartar sauce is about bringing everything into balance. And it's the same sort of thing as a full English breakfast, which was a close second to my main course.
Right.
But the idea of going, all of those flavours that are salty and kind of protein-led and starchy, that then you need something to balance it up.
Right.
And this is where I think brown sauce and red sauce, that, all right, there's loads of sugar and salt in them, but what you think about, they're a balance of acidity. They're sugar and vinegar that's reduced down and mixed together. So when people are putting red sauce on stuff and brown sauce, all they're doing is bringing in a natural balance of cooking. They're almost becoming Michelin star chefs. It's your mouth that's bringing it all together. You want it all together. So
what's your ideal, like, is there somewhere you've had the best fish and chips you've ever had?
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds so simple, doesn't it, fish and chips? But there's nothing simple about it. Like, some of the best fish and chips you'll have is, you know, when their chips are like really soggy and a bit rubbish because it's the summertime and there's too much sugar in a potato in the summertime. There's not enough starch, and that's why new potatoes don't make great, they're not very good at chipping. But you know, and then when you put malt vinegar on it and the paper's stuck to the chips and all that, actually that's quite a nice thing. But I couldn't serve soggy chips with paper stuck to them in a restaurant.
Sure.
So you go, okay, so then we have to go down the triple cook chip route,
right?
Which is kind of like, I mean, the whole science of it is boring, and I won't tell you on the podcast because, like, it will go on forever. But you triple cook them to make sure they're lovely and crispy.
Uh-huh.
You go, well, then all of a sudden, like, you don't give as many chips, and the process costs too much money.
Sure.
So it's a very fine balance between the best chips in the world or soggy, wet ones covered in paper.
Yeah.
And then you've got the fish. Up north is haddock. Everyone loves haddock. Down south, it's cod. Up north, they like to cook more often than not in beef dripping. Down south, it's in veg oil. So, like, it's
political.
It's massive, yeah. And you don't know. What would you have? Would you have haddock? See, would you have haddock cooked in veg oil? That would spin everyone out. That's like yeah. that's like the northern fish cooked the southern
this is
way.
A classic Kevich half and half.
Yeah,
we're doing it again.
It is. It's going to go lovely with your glass of Starkling.
Yeah. He's splitting them immediately.
Yeah, so
he's having triple cooked soggy chips, probably.
Yeah, that's a nice idea. Triple. I'm going to have triple cooked soggy chips with haddock from up north cooked in veg oil down south.
Yeah,
and served with. And fish, it's got to have mushy peas with it, undoubtedly. And then, and I'm never sure, right? So curry sauce or gravy, chips and gravy is amazing, right?
Yeah.
Fish and curry sauce, delicious.
Yeah.
So probably all of it.
You would want...
I would have all of it.
Full, yeah.
Everything.
Full load.
Also, right, have you always liked mushy peas?
Always liked
mushy always.
Peas. Always liked mushy peas.
Does this fit in with your theory that no kid has mushy peas?
No. I was, but as a kid, I did not like mushy peas.
But it's basically like baby food consistency, isn't it? So you would have thought babies would be into mushy peas.
I did not like them. And I used to work in a kitchen. Worked in a few kitchens, actually, Tom. And
by the way, in the last kitchen he worked in, he was known as the Mash King.
That's true.
I love that.
Because I made the best mash.
Was that actually your name, the Mash King?
People would call me that, yeah.
I love
Some people think that maybe I was called that because no one else wanted to make the mash, and they thought if they called me the Mash King, I'd want to do it. But I don't think that's true.
Kitchen nicknames are quite good. There's a lot of them going around. Like,
and they're not always complimentary, kitchen
nicknames. No, I have to be honest. I work with a guy, not in our kitchen, but he has a story of when he worked for a very famous chef, and I won't tell you who he is, but he worked for him for 6 months, and for the whole 6 months, he was known as Nob. That was it. No one actually knew his name. He turned up on day one and he said, "What's your name?" And he said, "Doug." And they went, and the head chef went, "No, it's Nob. And you're known as Nob from now on." So for six months, he was called Nob until he left.
Was that because it was his job to put the knob of butter in the mash?
Exactly
the
that, yeah. He would have worked quite well with you as the Mash King. Mash King and Nob.
Mash King and Nob. Yeah. And Milky Joe.
Milky Joe. But at the end, I'd actually use cream a lot of the time in the mash. That's what I used to do. That was my secret.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have told that to a chef.
Oh. Yeah. No.
He's going to use it. He's going to steal my secrets from me.
Take your throne.
Oh, cream in mash. Let me just write that down.
No. Oh, dear me. I will no longer be the Mash King. Kev's just taking my crown.
Yeah. And can I say, Tom, fish and chips for your main, it's admirable how quickly the low-carb thing...
Oh, it's gone out the window.
It's just out the window.
No, completely. We've stuffed it right up here. I've gone for freshly made bread, butter, fish and chips, calamari. I'm like, but this is kind of like, I'm trying to view this. Is this like my last meal or is this the ultimate meal?
No, it doesn't matter. Any way you want to view it, really. But it's like the best stuff you've had in your life. The things
I'll stick with fish and chips, don't worry. We'll call it an off day and we'll have fish and chips. Yeah, definitely fish and chips.
If I'd like to return briefly to your recipes.
Yes.
Because I've got a bone to pick with you.
Okay.
You're responsible for quite a traumatic event in my life. So recently, me and I was going to say friend of the podcast, but everyone hates him, Joel Domit. we were a team on Pointless Comedians.
Yeah.
You've seen Pointless, you know how it works?
I know how it works, yeah.
So one of the rounds, second round in the show... was five dishes by famous chefs.
Yeah.
And we had to name all pasta dishes, and we had to name just an ingredient that was in any of those dishes.
Yeah.
One of them was Tom Kerridge's spaghetti bolognese. Right. That was one of the ones. Joel Domit, on his one, he guessed a different dish by someone else. Can't remember what it was. He guessed capers. It wasn't in any of the dishes. We got 100 points.
Love that.
Comes to me.
Yeah.
I've got to save us now.
Yeah.
We're going out if I don't get a low one.
Yeah.
I'm looking at him. I think, someone told me that to plump up the beef sometimes in spaghetti bolognese, people put dark chocolate in spaghetti bolognese. I've got to get a low score. I took a swing. Said dark chocolate. And you already know, Tom, that is not in your spaghetti bolognese. And we went crashing out on 200 points. You humiliate me on live.
There's a reason we've asked you here today, Tom. Yeah. And James is going to settle some scores.
Well, no, but hold on a minute. I might just start the train. Dark chocolate.
Oh, no!
I'm
helping me even more.
Okay, I love it here. Any more recipes?
Oh, my God!
The next book is going to be creamy mash and chocolatey bolognese.
Chocolate cream mash.
Although, I mean, to be fair, I do put dark chocolate in a chili.
Oh, God damn it.
There you go.
So close.
So it's very similar, but
that
not
stings
quite.
Even more. Knowing that you do it.
Do it, but not in a bolognese.
What are, in your bolognese, what ingredient do you reckon would be a pointless answer? Would be the least amount of people. What is the most left field ingredient in your spaghetti bolognese?
I've got to be honest, it's the one that I argue about most with my wife, is whether carrots should be in it or not. There's always a household argument, right?
Yeah.
And in everybody's house about certain random things. In ours, it's about carrots in bolognese.
Yeah.
I think they should be in there.
Right.
My wife, Beth, definitely not. No carrots. So that would have been a no pointer. It depends who's made the bolognese.
How are you cutting them, these carrots?
Perfectly diced, obviously.
When you say obviously, I think my mum.
I'm a fan of a carrot in bolognese, I think, because you dice them small and they just sweeten it up, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I've tried this argument, and it doesn't work.
No, I'm sorry. I understand you.
If you met my wife, you just go, fine, all right, we just won't put carrots in it. I'll show her, I'll put sweet potato.
Very, very good. That brings us back to Joel Dommett, though, for mentioning sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
He had that as his side after having chips as his main. Oh, fucking idiot. Talking about side dishes, what would be your side dish, Tom?
Well, so now it doesn't quite go with anything, right? So we've gone a flow, we've gone for calamari, and now we're going for fish. But I've gone for an aubergine dish that I had in Singapore. It was amazing. Like, it was one of the most amazing meals I've ever had, and I've had. Like, I've been very fortunate, you know, you've been over the world and cooking in lots of different places and been shown. And when you're in the food scene, you turn up in different places and they take you around. Journalists and other chefs take you to the nightlife and see. I don't know if you guys have been to Singapore or not, but there's an amazing nightlife in Singapore. Mm. It goes on all night. It's a 24-hour city, and there's also, like, it has a very abundant and very busy red light area. But in between the red light area, it's very well organised. Singapore. So there's a street of which is a red light area. Uh-huh. Then there's a street of food. Street food.
Right.
Then there's a street of red light area. Then a street food. And like it's just like goes down like that. So we went out after work and obviously went to the street food.
Yeah.
And we sat there as a bunch of chefs until about 4 or 5 in the morning with this one guy cooking food and just bringing out loads and loads of different dishes. And it was an aubergine dish. And we were sat in something, it was called Rat Alley. Mm-hmm. We were sat on the tiny little plastic seats. And we ate, it just brought out everything. And it was amazing. It was this little fried aubergine dish with lots of chilies on it and lots of like Singaporean Chinese style flavours, and I couldn't tell you how he made it, but it was just delicious. Doesn't really go with fish and chips, but I liked it.
Backs up your dad's theory.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, sitting in a little alleyway, that's what the best
Rat
yeah,
Alley.
Rat Alley. It's definitely not like a tourist space that you're
Did the man
at.
Have a big chef's hat on, and is it possible there was a little rat there pulling his hair and making him make the... So that's how he's making all the food.
There may well have been, actually. Yeah. It was that good.
Might have been Ratatouille.
It could have been Ratatouille. It could have been Ratatouille. But yeah, so that was a Singapore trip, which was incredible. Like, and it is an amazing food scene. If you love food, Singapore as a city is fantastic, because you've got everything from like street food for £1 through to like 3 Michelin star chefs cooking in posh hotels. Like, there's everything that you want there. But yeah, but definitely an aubergine dish at 4 o'clock in the morning in Rat Alley next to a load of hookers was brilliant. it was a brilliant way to end the evening.
And you were there with loads of different chefs.
Yes.
And what was were you all there working, or was it like a...
No, we were there working. We were cooking, showcasing what we do, British food and stuff out there in a different space. But then the hotel that we were working in, all the chefs that were there then said, come on out with us. Yeah. So like when chefs get together, chefs are like pirates is the best way of describing it. Kitchens are like pirate ships. They're full of people that have been hit over the head and woke up one morning.
Yeah.
On a boat going somewhere, and it's like they're amazing places. There's also it's a hugely eclectic mix of people in a kitchen, but they're all there for one reason. Most of them, when they're in their early 20s, is to get laid, drunk, and cook stuff. Basically, like the kitchens are like mental places. So all of these chefs were out in Singapore in this crazy environment. It was brilliant. It was such a good space. And as far as I remember, because those were still in my drinking days. So I kind of like, I remember to the aubergine after that, and who knows what.
Can you have an even better side dish after the aubergine?
Yeah.
and we will never know.
That's, yeah,
but the aubergine is so good.
Like, who knows what dessert was?
Yeah.
The aubergine's so good it punches through like that, the fog of that night.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does as well. And they also have something called stinky fruit. I don't know if you've heard of it. Durian fruit.
No. Like, oh, I have actually. Yeah, yeah.
There is nothing so smelly and bad as really? Durian fruit. It is the worst thing. Like, oh my God, they have massive stalls of it and they're like great big green things that look about the size of a watermelon. But they hum. They smell the whole of the area where they smell and you cut them out and it's kind of like custardy, like rotten custardy in a fruit. But it's seen as a huge speciality, but they're not allowed in hotels. They're not allowed on planes. They're not, but they're that's wrong. Right. That's,
and
that's
you, have
very
you, you've
wrong.
Eaten it?
I have eaten it. Yeah. I have eaten
it. And does it taste as bad as it smells?
It tastes worse. it was so bad. But actually one of the chefs that was with us, Chris, who's my head chef of one of the places, we were out there. And Chris is too polite. I had the first bit. I was like, I'm not fucking eating any more of that. And there was another two of our head chefs out there, and they were like, we're not doing that. But Chris, because he felt so polite that someone had taken us to this place, Chris ate all of ours.
Oh, wow.
And you can see him repeating. Going in. And then about 20 minutes later, we were in a cab, so we had to stop. He had hot sweats. It was just so bad. It was like watching him chunder on the side of the road after eating stinky fruit.
It's a real speciality.
Out of politeness.
Yeah, out of politeness, yeah.
It's even called stinky fruit. For God's sakes.
Do they call it stinky fruit?
No, I'm sure I might have offended a load of Singaporeans then, but you know.
they call it a guff apple. as a chef, do you think, like, when someone offers you anything to eat, even something that smells that bad, you think, well, I've got to try it?
Yeah, I try everything. Like, I'm up for trying everything. Like, because, you know, food is amazing and you never know what you come across because it might be fantastic, but, you know, also there's some pretty rogue stuff out there, but I'm quite happy to eat something like fermented shark. I've had whale. I've had these off herrings that they do in Sweden where they salt these herrings and they leave them till they're rotten and then they put them in a tin and they leave, and the tin is warped where they've fermented so much that the gas comes out of it. And you're supposed to open the tin in a bucket of water so that the smell doesn't come out. And I've eaten some of that. And we did it in a big TV studio, funny enough. We opened the tin, but not in water. And the studio was, I mean, it was huge. Like, everyone had to evacuate. The smell was so bad. It was so bad. So I've eaten that. I've eaten century egg, you know, the Chinese thing where there's the black egg that's been cured with horse urine. Originally, it's not anymore. They use a different type of acid now, but I've eaten that as well. And that's like, I mean, yeah, that's not great neither.
Like, are they the ones with you get ones with the actual like chick still in the middle of it? Have you seen those?
Yeah, I have seen those. No, I've not eaten that. That would be maybe a step too far for me. I think like peeling the egg with the chick still in it, I think that would be, that. I don't think I could do that.
On Life in a Day, I saw that. It's a documentary film. It's a YouTube made it. And they got people from all over the world just to film their life on. It's all the same day of the year, and they all just sent in the footage, and then YouTube cut it up and made one long film. But one of the clips is a guy eating that, and all you see of that guy is that he eats that egg, and I absolutely hate him. I've never hated someone so much. I've just seen such a small glimpse into his life.
Do you think that is his life, or do you think he was thinking, "I want to make the edit here"?
Yeah, probably showing off a bit. Yeah, no, he was really proud. He was showboating it a bit because he was like. Yeah. First we peel this and then the salt, and he's like, and then he puts his finger in the air like he's testing the wind and goes, so everything's done, and then he puts it in his mouth. Absolutely gross.
Does he eat it all in one?
Yeah, all in one he goes. He pops it in one.
I think you've got to go all in one with that, to be honest.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to see the inside of it.
No.
I wouldn't want to bite it in half and then be like,
no,
lose your
point.
Appetite
you've
halfway
just
through.
Go for it, haven't you?
Yeah. Like I'm a celebrity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not your side dish. Let's not get side.
No, the aubergine.
Well, I might change it now, actually.
The aubergine is the side dish.
The aubergine is the side dish, but now I'm thinking, you know, I'm up for trying everything. Maybe a half-baked, unborn chick from an egg. You know, I mean, it might go with fish and chips better than aubergine. Who knows?
you haven't tried it yet?
Yeah, it's like the ultimate pickled egg to have with fish and chips, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I've got curry sauce, mushy peas and gravy to take the taste away if I don't like it.
Cover it up.
Right.
Yeah, it's no bother.
That guy might have been teeing himself up for some fish and chips in Life in a Day. I don't know. That YouTube man. Maybe just ate that little chick and then they cut it at that point, but you might have just gone around the corner to a chippy.
Yeah, very true.
I used to live around the corner from a chip shop and it backed onto my garden. So when we were out playing football in the back garden, we could always smell the fish and chips. It drove us crazy.
I had a stand-up gig in Durham, set it up ourselves, and it was above a fish and chip shop. It was a nightclub above a fish and chip shop called Fish Tank.
Mm.
And it was only seated about 30 people, but it just stunk of chip oil.
I love that. Where was that, up north?
Yeah, in Durham, yeah.
So was that beef fat chip oil or was that veg
fat?
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been beef fat chip oil, I'd imagine.
That's what you got the audience to shout at the gigs.
Yeah. Beef fat.
Getting the crowd warmed up.
That was also my nickname back then.
Yeah. Fat shaming. Hence why we both went on diets. You lost 6 stone.
And now everyone calls him beef sexy.
Sexy beef.
Sexy beef boy. Shout out to that chip shop, actually, that I live, because that's still my favourite fish and chips in the whole of the world, is Nick's Fish and Chip Shop in Kettering.
So it's still there?
Yeah, still there. Also, the guy there called Dustin used to work there, who my dad used to teach when back in the day. And then I remember once we were walking past the fish and chip shop and we looked in and Dustin was sitting there eating some chips. And my dad went, Dustin, stuffing his face with some chips. And I laughed for so long. But he said, Dustin, and I still think of it. It's still making me want to laugh now.
Dustin stuffing his face with
some chips. Dustin stuffing his face with some chips still makes me laugh. There you go. To drink, sir.
Well,
also, he's probably going half and half again. Half Coke Zero, half Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Half wine, half beer.
It's very difficult this because I'm trying to work out. So I knocked booze on the head about nearly six years ago, right? So it became quite a huge part of my life. Yeah. Is the best way of describing it. So I'm like, if this is a one-off thing, mm-hmm. like, and it's just one-off, and it will never affect my brain cells again, and it won't take me. I might go for 24 cans of Stella. Alternatively.
I'd absolutely love that.
Why are you trying to skip over that?
Yeah. Alternatively, a can of Diet Lilt. I love Diet Lilt with fish and chips. You know, can of Lilt.
Diet Lilt.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in a... Well, I have had it. Actually, that's what I was going to say. I haven't seen it in ages. I had some yesterday. But it's one of the... So, you know, it depends on how bad we've been. I mean, I've gone for fish and chips. If I'm going all in and it's one day only... And it's not going to take me down the route that I went down. Maybe a whole slab of Stella.
Yeah.
That would... Why Stella?
Of all of the beers?
Well, I think when you have an issue with alcohol, you look for the ones that hit the spot quicker.
Right. Okay.
Stella was great.
Stella's straight there.
Yeah.
Specifically 24 cans of it.
Yeah, well, like, you load up with 24 and then you see where an evening goes.
Yeah. That's pre.
I think the fact you leave the house. 24 cans of Stella probably shows that you were right to knock it on the head, Tom. If that's your go-to. Yeah.
Do you want them as separate cans? Or, because I can do whatever you want here, I can do as one big guzzler can for you that's like 24 cans with a little straw, maybe.
Well, if we're going for it and we're in a restaurant and there's like, I wouldn't mind one of those like really comedy hats that have cans in that you could sit in. Yeah, exactly. And so then a straw.
Do you want one of those that can fit 24 cans?
Yeah, 12 each side would be
so
amazing.
Like a huge Stetson.
I'm up for that. Yeah, that would be great. Can you arrange that, Mr.
Genie? Yeah, I'll sort that out for you.
There we are.
No worries. One Stetson beer dome coming right up. 24 cans of Stella.
Yeah.
Oh, Lilt's good, don't you? Did they still only do one flavour of Lilt? Because for a while they did another one and it was
They did, didn't they? They did another one that was a little bit more...
Mango?
Mangoey, apricot. It was mango.
That's too tropical for me, I think.
Yeah,
a bit too tropical with mango.
And Lilt's already totally tropical.
It is totally tropical.
Yeah.
What is it? Pineapple and grapefruit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I want one now.
Also, and you know what? If you've got the hat, and as it's you, you're allowed the hat with 24 cans of Stella, and then at the top of the hat, there's a Lilt as well with a separate straw.
I love that. Yeah, that's great. That probably makes the worst shandy.
Yeah.
Lilt and Stella.
I'd like a Stella Lilt top, please.
Diet Lilt. Does Diet Lilt now...
Well, that's because I've gone... if I was going really good, I'd go low sugar. So I'd go low sugar. In real world now, it would be Diet Lilt.
Yes.
No sugar. But if we're going in...
It's a dream restaurant.
It's a dream restaurant, and the chaos and mayhem, the part of drinking that I loved, the bits that you go, this is great.
Yeah.
That I'd go with a Stella.
But then I see, a diet. So I stopped drinking cola, all brands of cola, like 5 years ago. Maybe a bit longer than that. And just didn't drink anything like that for ages. And then started drinking Diet Coke again about a year ago. And now, this is the most boring thing I say this to people all the time. It's the most boring thing I say to anyone. It just tastes like normal Coke.
That's pretty boring.
Because I haven't had full fat Coke in so many years. And I didn't even drink Diet Coke in that time.
Yeah.
So then when I went back to Diet Coke.
Yeah.
I said, like, this tastes like a normal Coca-Cola.
And you established it was boring, and you said it, and we all agreed with our eyes that it was boring.
Yeah.
And then you thought, I'm going to explain it again.
Here's the thing. Even though I know it's boring, I still love telling people about it. Because it, genuinely, I feel like it's my biggest life hack.
Yeah.
Stop drinking all cola products for five years.
Yeah, what a life hack.
And then go in again, but just the diet range. And then everything will taste like it did before. Yeah. So it's like you're having a naughty drink, but you're not. Now we come to the dessert. Speaking of being naughty, this is where most people can be quite naughty.
Yes.
And I think you've been pretty naughty so far.
Yeah. I have, yeah, so I'm going full on for, I'm going to go for a Knickerbocker Glory from the Burnie Inns circa 1982. That's
a trouble through time.
That's like the dream.
Burnie Inns, I don't know Burnie Inns, I'm not familiar.
You're not old enough, that'd be why.
Yeah,
So Burnie Inns were like the first kind of, not gastropubs, but they were like a brand, a themed pub that was a bit like Beefeaters. It was just like that before them. And they used to do like half a roast chicken with fries and peas that had been left under the hot lamps for ages. So they were like all little dried up things.
Right.
And they would have donuts as a dessert. And it was one of those places that used to have fruit juice as a starter. That was on the start.
Yeah. Like Mitchell Osman talked about this.
Yeah. So there you go. So it's back to that sort of era. But they used to do Knickerbocker Glories. So I think these great big tall glasses. And it's like a 1982, I'd have been like nine.
Yeah.
So like as a chubby 9 year old, you're like, this is the dream. Yeah. Like with chocolate sauce and strawberry sauce and like everything about it. There was probably no real ice cream in it. It's all that synthetic. So it was just like, I mean, yeah, amazing places. They were the first gastro pubs, Burnie Inns.
Burnie Inns.
When you mimed that then, the Knickerbocker Glory, you did it from a child's perspective because I doubt they were as big as you showed us then.
I'm thinking, it must have been
roughly what's that
big.
The size of, would you say? What's that?
I mean, that's like 2 foot.
That's a small cabinet?
Yeah.
you just mimed that?
So I remember what it was like as nine, looking up at it with awe.
That's my memory of my first banana split. Was that it was the size of an actual boat that I had, and it was like humongous, and it was still the best banana split I've ever had. I remember it was a meal that we went for. I don't know where it was, but my cousins were there. I remember that, and we all did these banana splits. They're massive. One of the scoops of ice cream in there was pistachio, which at that age I definitely didn't like.
Yeah.
But I ate the whole thing. Everyone was really impressed. I ate the whole thing, and then I went around polishing off other people's ones. That's how much I love that banana split.
Your finest moment.
And since then. Well, basically, I haven't had a banana split for years, and now I'm going to go and diet banana splits. It'll taste exactly the same. No.
Just bananas, yeah.
Just bananas.
That's a diet banana diet split. Banana it's split. Just a banana.
Just
isn't
a banana.
It?
Little life hack. Cut a banana in half. Eat that.
So take us through layer by layer in the Knickerbocker Glory.
You've got to have like crunchy, crispy bits at the bottom, and that's the bit that you always want to get to. So you have special spoons, don't you? Like you have special Knickerbocker
spoons.
Yeah, and that's the bit you want to get to. So it's trying to get to the crunchy bits at the bottom whilst not getting your knuckles covered in the top of the cream and the like bright, luminous, red, kind of clear strawberry sauce.
Yeah.
So you've got different layers of ice cream, different layers of crunch, texture. I mean, it's just layer upon layer of cream, ice cream, sauce, broken biscuits, basically.
So is that the crunch, broken biscuits?
Broken biscuits. I imagine it was broken biscuits.
Ask for what you want here, though. You could
have some broken biscuits. And what kind of biscuits do you want me to break up in this Knickerbocker Glory?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm partial to a hobnob. Quite like a hobnob.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're quite good.
It's a crunchy biscuit as
well. It is a crunchy biscuit, and it's got that lovely little salty kind of oaty thing to it. Yeah. And that's the thing that takes biscuits to the next level, pinch of salt.
Salty biscuits. I'm a big fan of salt and sweet. You know that.
Yeah.
Don't know why I'm telling you. Should be telling Tom. is the one who doesn't know.
Everyone loves salt caramel, don't they?
Yeah, well, you think some people don't, and those people really
who doesn't like grind salty my caramel? Gears.
They really get to me when they say they don't like it.
Yeah.
I've met a few people who say they don't like it. They really make a point of it as well, like they're better than me. Very annoying.
Talk to us about the flavours of ice cream. What's going into it?
Well, you've got to have vanilla, right? But we've got to a point, so where we cook now, vanilla ice cream like tastes of vanilla and not too sugary. But in those days, vanilla ice cream didn't taste of vanilla. It tasted of sugar. Right. So you just go, so it's got to have, just have this white, like white, sweet, cold ice cream. You've got to have chocolate in there. Chocolate ice cream would be amazing. Got to have strawberry in there. Pistachio would be quite nice, but that's a little bit, I think that's a little bit too left field for a proper 1982 Knickerbocker
glory.
That's
not authentic. Yeah.
No, I think you've got to have chocolate, vanilla, strawberry. But the thing is, when I remember and look back at it, I don't think any of them tasted of chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry. I think they're just all just different colours of the same ice cream.
Just cold. Sugar.
Yeah, cold
sugar. Yeah.
Sweet. But I'll go for that.
Yeah.
You know, we've gone for it. I mean, I've drunk 24 cans of Stella by now. I don't really care.
I mean, you're not remembering this course, are you?
Yeah. Maybe that's what I had in Singapore.
Yeah. You could have had a Knickerbocker Glory as well.
Cherry on top?
Oh, definitely, yeah, glacé cherry.
Glacé cherry.
Do you know what? Let's put sparklers in it. So let's have sparklers going on the top as well.
Yeah, first bites with the eye.
Yeah.
I was saying, I picked up in the chef industry, Tom. When I used to work in the kitchen, Mr. Sage.
Hold on, I'm writing that one down as well.
First bites with the eye. It's not literal.
I don't want you getting mistaken there, Tom.
It means that has to look good, okay?
The cover of your next book is just you and loads of mashed potato in your eyes.
I worked at, now I'm thinking if I should mention the establishments, because I've definitely mentioned one of them in a negative light in the past and not named it for legal reasons. But I worked at the and I worked at the Star in Geddington. So the Star was like a family-run place, very nice little village pub, all home-cooked stuff, and the was part of a chain of, you know, it had a soft play area in it. Does that give you a good idea of what kind of a place it is?
I love that place. Your
places have got a soft play area as well.
No, but I'm thinking it might be a way forward. You know, like, why not? Let's have a
Michelin star restaurant with a soft play area in it.
I think that's a great idea. And were you the Mash King at both places?
No, I was Mash King at the village pub.
Right.
We weren't making mash at the... at the other one. No. I mean, maybe people were making mash there, but I can't remember people doing it. I was mainly putting stuff in microwaves. And I did do desserts there, actually. I did make the sundaes there. That was quite a... I enjoyed that. Once we had this gingerbread ice cream, which was like... I loved it. And we didn't have it for very long. For what it was like a limited sundae. It was this gingerbread sundae. It was gingerbread and chocolate ice cream. And on the last day of that, they said, this is the last day we're doing the gingerbread sundaes now. And there was like one tub left. And I was like, said to my friend Graham, whatever's left in that tub at the end of the day, I'm eating it. It was a full tub. I was like, so I was hoping all day that people didn't order the gingerbread sundae. Probably about two people did. The rest of it is still in there. And because I was so honest at that point, I was like, I should probably buy it off of them. I can't just eat it before they throw it. So I went to the manager and said, can I buy this off you? It was a little tub. He went, yep, I'll just work it out. And he basically worked out how many scoops were in there roughly, how many sundaes they would have sold for that amount of money, and charged me for that many sundaes. So I paid about 40 quid for a tub of ice cream and sat there eating it before it melted. So I was like, it'll be melt by the time I get home. So
I can see this is where the flaw in your chefing career went.
Yeah.
Every chef that I know, the best chef, they steal everything. Yeah. They rob the whole lot. They'd have eaten the ice cream through service. They'd have eaten it before the customers have ordered it. They go, it's the last one anyway, I'm eating it.
Yeah.
And the check came on and said, can I have a gingerbread sundae? They're gone, nah.
No.
All gone.
No.
All gone. All gone.
Very popular. Very popular.
It wasn't your cooking ability that let you down. No. It was your ability to rob stuff.
Yeah. It's stupid conscience.
Too honest to be a chef, mate.
Yeah,
really regret doing it, but such good ice cream. Oh my god, that! And we were talking about the gingerbread spice ice cream that came out of Christmas, the Ben and Jerry's one.
Yeah,
I mean, you probably didn't have that because you're a good boy now. But like, holy mackerel,
good.
Yes,
holy mackerel was a more disappointing Ben and Jerry's flavour.
Yeah,
they got too mackerel. Experimental.
Yeah. Yeah. Mackerel and stinky fruit flavour ice cream did not go well. Yeah. think that's a great meal.
Yes.
I'll just read it back to you, Tom, so we make sure we've got it right. Water, you would like half and half?
Yeah. But I'll go with it. I'm just happy,
whatever's easiest. Yeah. But I'll tell you what's going to happen every time I come over. I'm going to pour both in at once.
Yeah.
So it's nice. Actually, I'm doing the most hard thing, and that'll really annoy you. you want bread, you want a proper, warm, crispy, crunchy baguette, soft on the inside with loads of freshly made butter.
Do we specifically want the bread from that restaurant? Do you just want that bread?
It sounds like you should have the bread from that restaurant.
I'd like the bread from Franzen, please. It's a three Michelin star restaurant in Stockholm.
Yeah, you can have the Franzen, the Franzen bread. Yeah. You would like calamari and mayo for your starter, maybe the one that you had in Greece?
Yeah, definitely, but not the reformed one. Proper fresh squid.
Proper rings.
Fish and chips as your main. You didn't specify a place for the fish and chips.
No, because I think you can have it anyway. You can have it like in posh restaurants, or you can let's have it on a beach sat on the North Kent coast.
But you wanted everything on there, didn't you? Everything from all over the country on there.
Yeah. You would gravy, mushy peas, and curry sauce.
Rat alley aubergine.
a bit of rat alley aubergine. That's
aubergine.
Definitely.
Drink, you would like Stetson beer dome with 24 cans of Stella and a diet lilt with a separate straw.
Yes, please.
Your dessert, Knickerbocker Glory from Bernie's in circa 1982. Great meal.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Delicious meal. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you very
much. Thank you so much, Tom. Tom Kerridge.
What a meal.
What a guy. Always, I think it's... when we have someone that we don't know on or that we haven't met before, we're always a bit more like, okay, we need to make sure this goes well because we don't want to look like a couple of punks in front of someone we don't know.
Yep.
And you know what? He was such a lovely, relaxed man. I think it all went fine, didn't
it? We felt at ease immediately.
Yeah. It was what a meal as well.
I didn't expect it.
No?
Didn't expect... I mean, I guess, you know, you kind of think people who are Michelin-starred chefs, maybe they just like, you know, they just crave fish and chips, sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't expect it. Nice. I liked it.
It's good.
Some good stories as well.
Yeah, great stories.
And he didn't mention quinoa.
He didn't. That's the crucial thing. He did not mention quinoa. I thought he might mention quinoa because there is a recipe that looks very delicious.
Yeah.
That has quinoa in it in his new book, Tom Kerridge's Fresh Start.
Yes, that is true. There's a lot of great recipes in there, Ed. We're having a flick through earlier on.
We're having a little flick through. It's accessible stuff that you can cook at home that looks fresh, healthy, and impressive.
Yeah. Well done, Tom.
Good
book.
You could put that on the cover of the next one.
Yeah.
Well done, Tom. Good book. James A. Caster.
Yeah, Genie.
Genie wearing on socks.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening. As always, like, subscribe, review, all of that stuff. Follow us on social media, Out of Menu Official. And just keep looking. I'll be honest, James, I've been quite overwhelmed by the response to the podcast so far.
It's been lovely. Please keep on harassing Joel Dommett, all the listeners. Please keep on trolling him and having a go at him for his meal. We're really enjoying seeing that.
Hey, guys, I'm on tour.
Ed is on tour doing the show Blizzard, aren't you?
I am, mate, yeah.
Starts at the end of January?
Starts at the end of January, all through the months of 2019. Come and give it a watch.
Lovely stuff, Ed.
It's a funny old show, guys. Feel free to approach me if you see me and ask me poppadoms or bread.
Yes. What am I doing? On tour also.
I'm looking forward to mine more than James, by the sounds of it.
No, I'm looking forward to it, sure. And that episode of Pointless that I mentioned in the episode, that will have gone out by the time this podcast is out, so you can probably find that on iPlayer.
Yeah.
Watch that. See how me and Joel do, but you know. You've heard Joel's off menu. I'm teamed with an absolute pig shit. So how am I meant to do?
Bad luck, Joel. It's not even your episode anymore. You're getting called a pig shit.
Yeah, deservedly so, Joel. I had to throw myself down on the line with you and say dark chocolate in a spag bowl.
And it was in his chili.
That is the biggest sting. The fact that he does actually put it in one of his dishes and it's in his chili.
Oh.
So close. And he would have done it to plump up the beef as well. That is so annoying.
Well, guys, thank you for listening to another wonderful episode. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bon appetit.
I didn't get to say what I wanted to say. I wanted to embarrass Ed at one point. Me and Ed were playing a game once with some friends.
Oh, yeah, this is true, actually.
This is good fun. We're playing a game. It's quite a complicated game to try and describe, actually. Okay. But the game was basically, you've got an island, you've got your own island. And it was just like, first of all, it's like you're allowed five animals on the island. We had to choose what five animals we would have on our island. And then it was, you have like five films you can watch on the island and like dishes and all stuff. And then one time it was five celebrities you can have on your island. And we had to choose. And Ed chose Tom Kerridge. You were in his five people he would have on the island because you wanted someone to cook for him.
And it seemed like you'd be a laugh on an island.
I'd be well up for that.
Great.
When are we going?
We can go right now.
I love that. I'm honoured. That's made me feel warm inside.
Do you want to hear what company you're in?
Oh, yeah.
Who were the other four? You were my first choice, and then I panicked.
He got us to such a flyer, and then watch this. Get ready to go rapidly descend downhill with your company. You're probably sharing a little building with these.
I remember.
Sandy from Gogglebox.
Sandra from Gogglebox, yeah. She seems like a proper laugh.
Yeah, she's coming. That's good fun.
Snoop Dogg?
Yeah, Snoop Dogg's got a cookbook.
Has he?
Yeah, we could be cooking hip hop food from Snoop Dogg's cookbook. This is so fun.
It's actually working out pretty well.
Yeah, this is good.
A few rappers have cookbooks. Curio's got a cookbook.
Miriam Margolis? Miriam Margolis?
You might have had Miriam Margolis, yeah. I think so. So, right, Rose Gallery of people you got hanging out together.
I did panic a little bit. But you're very welcome on the island.
Thank you. I quite happily light fires and cook stuff all day long. Someone's got to catch it, though.
Hopefully we all get on well. It doesn't end with you desperately trying to build a raft out of empty Stella cans.
Go away.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it's Rob Orton here. Now, I've got a podcast called the Rob Orton Daily Podcast. It's a short poem or story or a musing on a particular subject every single day. What if you commissioned Picasso to paint your house and he just painted it white? Would you be annoyed? Wouldn't it be good if you could pour Miracle-Gro onto other things, such as pizzas? Have you ever thought about what a beach might be like if it was made from digestive biscuits? Have you ever tried to cry about something you're not thinking about? If you would like to listen to a daily podcast that includes subjects I've mentioned there, then please listen to the Rob Orton Daily Podcast.